What we've seen over the past couple of years is that if you're on the surface of the Earth, you're visible. Things that are traditionally sent over water are going to have to go underwater. Blending in the electromagnetic spectrum, instead of using those unique military frequencies and high power transmitters, instead you try to use signals that match what's in the current environment.
You're listening to The Convergence, the Army's Mad Scientist podcast. I'm your host, Matt Sanisbert, and I'll be joined in just a moment by Rachel Melling of the Mad Scientist team. Mad Scientist is a U.S. Army initiative that continually explores the evolution of warfare, challenges assumptions, and collaborates with academia, industry, and government. You can follow us on social media at @ArmyMadSci or subscribe to the blog, The Mad Scientist Laboratory, at madsciblog.tradoc.army.mil. Today we're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Eric Keim, United States Marine Corps Communications Officer and student at the Army War College. We'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Keim about his work on the Sullivan's Travels project at the War College, what his research showed for the U.S. Army, and how blending might be a viable course of action in a cluttered battlefield. As always, the views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the Department of Defense, Department of the Army, Army Futures Command, or the Training and Doctrine Command. Let's get started.
All right, Lieutenant Colonel Keim, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so before we jump into everything, can you introduce yourself a little bit to our audience and give them a little bit of a background about yourself and what you're doing?
Okay, I'm a Marine Corps Communications Officer. Over my career, I've spent time in Iraq, Afghanistan, and numerous countries throughout the Western Pacific. And I'm currently finishing up a year of study at the Army War College in Carlisle.
That's awesome. We're very excited to have you here. And we're going to talk about your studies at the Army War College. So the first question is, can you tell us a little bit about the Future Dynamics of Warfare project? So how did that come about and what was your task in it?
At the War College, students have an opportunity to apply for a number of different programs that enhance the student academic environment. And you can explore issues relative to specific subjects or disciplines. One of those is Professor Chris Wheaton, Dr. Kathleen Moore, Professor Sam White, and Colonel Matt Rasmussen. They teach a future seminar that's designed to provide students with a unique set of skills to help them answer questions about the future. They use a learning by doing technique where students get divided into small groups and are assigned to answer a question from Army senior leaders. This year, some of those senior leaders include the Army G2 and the commanders of U.S. Army Pacific and U.S. Army Futures Command, just to name a few. My group was tasked with answering a question for the TRADOC G2 on how will innovations from contemporary conflict likely shape the future dynamics of warfare, and what does that mean for large-scale combat operations and pacing threats by 2035. Our research was not just about understanding those innovations and how they've been used in recent conflicts, which are evolving so rapidly that, you know, every day there's a new innovation that came out almost, but then we have to predict what that impact is on the future of warfare.
I believe that everybody in your group had a couple different topics that they focused on. And so today we're going to talk about one of the specific ones that you worked on, which is the battlefield visibility, blending in the electromagnetic spectrum. So could you tell us about the research that you did for this piece, what blending means in this context, and how the current conflict in Ukraine influenced your findings?
Yeah, no problem. So we have our communication suites that use reserve frequencies, high power radio transmitters, which makes that like really easy for the enemy to triangulate and determine the origin of those transmissions. So reports from, you know, the Russia-Ukraine war really show that both sides were able to effectively locate the origin of those types of transmissions and then very quickly use a variety of kinetic methods to attack, whether that's mortars, traditional artillery, long-range rockets, or kind of the new innovation is the first-person drones that attacks that we've seen being very, very effective against Russian forces. Blending in the electromagnetic spectrum instead of using those unique military frequencies and high power transmitters, instead you try to use signals that match what's in the current environment. So things like Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, 4G and 5G cell networks, those are all things that are around most of this environment. So by using those frequencies, you're blending in with kind of the background noise, and it's much harder for the enemy to detect which transmissions are military transmissions and what transmissions are just the kind of normal background in the environment. Russia really had a problem with this, because when they switched from their military transmissions, they went to cell phone transmissions. Well, Ukraine was then able to, you know, take advantage of that because Russia wasn't using encrypted cell phone transmissions. So they were basically able to locate Russian forces using that as well. So it was kind of a double-edged sword for them on what they were using, because they hadn't really thought about using blended transmissions.
Yeah, that's really interesting. We've been hearing about this idea of blending or kind of hiding in plain sight. And now, because of what's going on in Russia, Ukraine, you know, that conflict has really been sort of a treasure trove of observations for the U.S. Army to look and say, hey, how would our TTPs work in large-scale combat operations? And we can see, okay, this is something we might need to change. So for us, from your point of view after your research, what lessons can the Army learn from your findings? What should we be doing now to change things so we don't fall into some of those same traps that you spoke about that the Russians did?
Yeah, I think one of the clearest lessons is that whenever you break squelch on modern military radios, you're basically broadcasting your location to the enemy. So you better apply the principles of shoot, move, communicate, and move, so that if and when you do need to transmit, you're aware that you might be inviting, you know, 155 round to be coming towards your position quickly. Then we need to develop military applications, we'll say, on cell phones or military radios that use cell phones frequencies, so that we can blend in with that environment. We're also going to need to have, you know, decoy type systems to make it more difficult for the enemy to locate our position. So if we have, you know, there's drones all over the place now. So if we have drones that can make the enemy think that we're in one location instead of where we are, then it takes the enemy that much longer to determine which of the transmitting signals is actually the enemy force. And maybe they're going to waste some of their exquisite munitions to target, you know, something that isn't an actual formation that we're trying to protect.
As we're talking about, you know, these changes in the character of warfare and lessons that we're seeing, or observations that we're seeing in Russia, Ukraine, in the current conflict, the Army is used to taking measures to reduce our signatures. And that, I think, it's the idea of masking or reduction or hiding. So this would call for a change in our TTPs, where we're keeping our signatures out in the open and we're just using what's already, like you said, in the environment. So what are some of the roadblocks, institutional or technological, that might prevent us from blending?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest changes necessary is kind of a modernization of what we in the Marine Corps at least call frequency managers. And the Marine Corps has actually been doing this, which is good. But a traditional frequency manager served more of an administrative function. They would make sure that we had the frequencies that we desired so that we could conduct our missions. So, you know, whether that was working in home station, just making sure that we're using frequencies allocated, or if we're using in a host nation situation, that we're deconflicting with the host nation's equivalent of the FCC. Over the past 5 to 10 years, we've really transformed that MOS into being more of an operational tactical mission, where they sense the electromagnetic spectrum environment, so they know what kind of normal is, so that one, they can detect anomalies in that environment so that we could, you know, target enemies. But then also, we're going to now know what the ambient conditions are, so that we know where we can hide our signals within the ambient environment. So that's one of the big changes that's going to have to occur. And then you kind of mentioned it, it's going to be a big balancing act with AI and data analytics and things coming online. Everybody wants to push that down as far as possible to the tactical edge so that we can gain the benefits of it. But that comes as a cost, because that's typically going to be a lot more transmissions. So we really have to balance, is it going to be worth it to send this, you know, augmented reality feed to a private or corporal or specialist on the front lines, risking identifying their location of the enemy? It's going to be a balancing act. And that's going to be something that really has to be go into the risk calculus for commanders in the future, I think.
That's a really great point that I didn't actually consider when I was thinking about this, because my first thought is, okay, how do we manage all of our signatures? But really what we need to ask ourselves is, are all of these signatures necessary all the time? Are there some we should be using in this area and some that we shouldn't, or at this point in time? So I think that's a great point. The next question I want to kind of set up. When I was a kid, one of my favorite books was a Dr. Seuss book called The Butter Battle Book. And it's essentially an arms race for kids, two sides that are going against each other. One butters their bread on the top side and one on the bottom side. And they essentially go to war, and they keep one-upping themselves with technology. So how does this idea look in 10 years time? How has it evolved? How, you know, if this is sort of a reaction to sensors that are sensing our signatures, and now we're having a reaction to that as blending our signatures in with everything else, how is this going to evolve? What does this look like?
So there's a lot of technologies coming online right now that are actually going to be big players in this, I think. So Starlink, you know, earlier this year started up their direct-to-cell service. So in certain areas, you can use your cell phone, your normal cell phone, to talk via a satellite. So that's going to change what the ambient environment is and what technologies we can use in a very remote locations, but still provide information back to a headquarters or to an adjacent unit. Another one is laser optical communications. In the Marine Corps, we call this free space optics. So instead of, you know, a fiber optics, the signal travels over a cable. Well, free space optical communication, the signal literally travels through the air, but it's a laser beam. So by shifting your transmission from more highly detectable radio frequencies to optical frequencies, makes it much, much harder for the enemy to detect the signal in general, and two, to locate the origin of that signal if they do even detect. So all of that's going to kind of come into play, I think, in the next 10 years. It's highly likely that we're going to see those technologies really making an impact. And then, as I mentioned earlier, really complex decoy systems that are able to fool people in visual, thermal, and electromagnetic means. So, you know, in Ukraine, they went, you know, old school with, like, back to the Normandy crossing with the inflatable tanks, and in Ukraine kind of one-upped it, and they added heat sources inside of it so that it looked like there was an engine inside those inflatable tanks. So it's fooling the visual and the thermal imagery. But in the future, you're also going to have to be able to at least produce what looks like an electromagnetic signature so that you can divert attention away from your forces to your decoys.
Yeah, decoys are something that we have been seeing, you know, in the G2 and our observations of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. It's heavily used and it's pretty advanced. Now they're like actually creating models that literally look almost identical to actual systems, with like moving parts and arms and things like that. So it's really become advanced, and that is something that we've looked at and thought about how are we going to do that in the future, because it's not something that we have been looking at recently. So I think that's a really great point.
So I want to kind of follow up. So in addition to the decoys, something I just saw the other day was almost in the lines of like cloaking technology a thermal cloaking technology that I saw. I think it's a British firm that was working on where they're able to change the outline, you know, using thermal panels, they're able to change the outline of like an infantry fighting vehicle or a tank so that it looks more like a Jeep or an SUV or something like that. So if somebody, you know, at nighttime, if somebody's trying to locate forces and they see a thermal signature that looks like an SUV, when in fact that's a, you know, an M1 tank, that's going to be a significant game changer on your ability to move forces undetected.
Yeah, I think that is something that's going to only progress in the future. And I think it's going to become a more complex problem. Like what Matt was saying, with advancements coming from both sides, it's going to be a one-up. It's going to be a cat and mouse game of who can make the better decoy and what technology can we use to progress that. So I think that's a really awesome, that's an example that I hadn't heard of. So I think that's a really great example. A question I wanted to ask was, I wanted to see if you could extrapolate this to the Indo-PACOM region. So we talk a lot about the examples that we see in Russia-Ukraine, but how do you think that the concept of blending would work in a fight in the Indo-PACOM AOR? So would it look the same? Would things be different? Do you see any type of differences in those two types of conflicts?
I think it's similar, especially, you know, once you get land force wise, but in the more maritime environment, what we've seen over the past couple of years is that if you're on the surface of the earth, you're visible. So things that are traditionally sent over water are going to have to go underwater to become hidden. So, you know, Anduril Technologies is developing autonomous submersible vehicles. Well, your logistics supply trains, especially if you're trying to get to hidden forces or forces that you're trying to, like the Marine Corps has the Marine Littoral Regiment concept, which is forces that are dispersed throughout the islands in the Indo-Pacific to hold key maritime terrain at risk. Well, if you're trying to keep those forces covert or semi-covert, then getting them supplies in a covert fashion is going to be important, because otherwise the Chinese are just going to say, well, look, let's watch this ship and where that ship goes. We know that there's forces there. So if you can, you know, have subsurface supply distribution, that's going to be key. And the big thing, like our silent service friends of submarine force, is, you know, making sure that you're a hole in the electromagnetic spectrum. So they make themselves a hole in the water. That's their joke, is like, you're not trying to find the boat. You're trying to find where the hole in the water is, because that's actually where the boat is. It's going to have to be similar for our forces. So as much as possible, using technologies that decrease their ability to be detected because they're blending in with what's in the ambient environment. Some of those islands don't have much in the means of transmission. So that means nothing, or, you know, new methods of technology, like I was talking about free space optics, those very, very difficult to detect, because you actually have to be between the source and the receiver to even know that that transmission's there. So we've been working on it for probably about 10 years. We've tested ship to shore with the free space optics and stuff like that. It works good for, you know, fixed installation, command post type stuff, but it really needs to evolve, I think, into on the move, because that's, again, going to be your key to survival is movement now.
Yeah, that's what we're learning. You know, we often talk about this idea of the transparent battlefield now. And you mentioned it. If you're on the surface of the earth, you know, you can be seen. And if you can be seen, you can be hit. And this is becoming even more prevalent in LISCO as we transition from our counterinsurgency, counterterrorism days. We didn't have to look at the battlefield in this way, but with the ubiquity of sensors from commercial, civilian, and military, there's a very high chance that you will be seen if you are out there. So as we wrap this podcast up, what I'll say is that we have your report on our APAN site. So if anybody wants to take a look at the report in its entirety, and there's a lot of analytical rigor that went into this. So if you're interested in reading the report in its entirety, you can go on our APAN page and find that. We're also going to be excerpting pieces of it for our blog posts in association with these podcasts as well. So the idea is blending. Go read about it. Go check it out on the report. And we'd like to thank Lieutenant Colonel Eric Keim for coming on the show today and talking to us about this idea and pushing us more towards the idea of blending in with our surroundings rather than trying to hide from everything. So, sir, thank you for coming on the show today and speaking with us.
Hey, thanks. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to The Convergence. I'd like to thank our guest, Lieutenant Colonel Eric Keim. You can follow us on social media at @ArmyMadSci, and don't forget to subscribe to the blog, The Mad Scientist Laboratory, at madsciblog.tradoc.army.mil. Finally, if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider giving us a rating or review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you accessed it. This feedback helps us improve future episodes of The Convergence and allows us to reach a bigger and broader audience.